Well, hello there. Welcome to the story of us, from cosmic dawn to the depths of being. I'm your host, Jeff Ellison. I want to welcome you to today's episode featuring Miss Haley Elizabeth Spears. Thanks for taking the time to tune in and listen to her story. If you're not familiar, The Story of Us is intended to be a captivating multimedia project that intricately weaves together timeless ancient wisdom and groundbreaking modern discoveries to unlock the profound mysteries of life. Through a combination of engaging storytelling, immersive visuals, and thought-provoking insights, our mission is to bring enlightenment to 21st century humans, guiding them on a transformative journey of self-discovery and deep understanding. By drawing connections between age-old philosophical teachings and contemporary scientific advancements, The Story of Us serves as a bridge between the past and present, illuminating the path for individuals seeking a deeper comprehension of their existence and the universe around them. This project not only aims to educate, but also to inspire, inviting people from all walks of life to partake in a collective exploration of what it means to be human in an ever-evolving world. Through podcasts, blog posts, and our Smart People Books Club suggestions, we bring together voices from across traditions, creating a rich tapestry of thought and understanding. Our goal is to trace our origins, uncover the threads that connect us as human beings, and identify our commonalities that transcend cultural boundaries. By engaging with diverse perspectives, we aim to awaken insight and foster a deeper awareness of the interconnectedness of all life. This exploration not only enriches our knowledge, but also inspires meaningful dialogue and transformative experiences that can lead to personal and collective growth. Our aim here is not to just offer answers, but to deepen the questions that matter to us most, like, how might understanding our shared stories serve to reconnect us with others, fostering a deeper sense of empathy and responsibility towards our fellow human beings? You know, I hope you've turned in and have found something valuable. So, let's kick off this episode with Haley. I can't wait for you all to meet this remarkable young woman. She's only just turned 27 years old, but Haley speaks like a well-seasoned veteran of life. She's a native of Louisville, Kentucky, and she currently lives in New Albany, Indiana, with her husband, Bryce. Listen to Haley. She'll tell you. She had an amazing childhood. She just lights up the room when talking about her formative years. She was very blessed to have been supported by a whole community of parents, grandparents, and others that made her feel cherished and loved. As a kid, Haley dreamed of being an actress. She had a passion for performing arts, theater, dance, but ultimately, what you'll learn is she was inspired by a whole village of strong women that were her biggest influence. In college, Haley majored in communications, and her first job was as a TV news producer. I think she quickly realized this work didn't fill her cup. She's very proud of a rich family history of taking care of other people. Several generations of her family have taken pride in being caregivers for some of the most vulnerable people in our population. Growing up, she watched these people in action and felt driven to earn her spot and make her mark in healthcare. So Haley is now writing her chapter in this family tradition and carrying on the legacy by working as a marketing director at Commonwealth Pain and Spine, supporting the chronic pain community and helping those that suffer from chronic pain conditions by using her talents for the common good. For Haley, a life well lived is ultimately about leaving the world in a better place than how she found it. The end goal is, like so many of her family that came before her, to help people who are in need improve their quality of life. I hope you enjoy this episode and find something inspiring in her story. To read more about some of the concepts covered in this episode, I invite you to visit our website at www.thestoryofusproject.com and make sure to check out the blog post entitled, May Your Cup Runneth Over. Reflections on the conversation with Haley Spears. And now, without further ado, I present to you Miss Haley Elizabeth Spears.
Okay. Haley, welcome.
Hi.
So good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad that you agreed to be on the show. You know that, you know, the story of us, it's about, you know, connecting with other humans, hearing their stories, and understanding how what makes them tick, right? Mm-hmm. And so you've been around from the very beginning, the inception of the story of us. I think that I loved when I told you what I was trying to create, that, you know, you really lit up. You had a lot of great ideas. And so I've been really excited to have you on the show and share some of your ideas and your story with the world. All 11 of our devoted listeners are excited to tune in and hear more about you. And you've got a voice. You've got some really cool things to say. I want to thank you again for, you know, really helping me through at the beginning stages of learning how to record the content, and really taking time out of what's a crazy busy schedule that you have as the marketing director for a huge, fast-growing company to sit down and tell us your story. So are you ready for this?
I'm ready. It's my pleasure.
Shift that microphone up a little closer to you, and we'll get cranking into it. So, Haley.
Yeah.
I want to know all about Haley Spears because we know each other. We've worked together for, you know, I don't know, how many
Almost
years
four
now?
Years.
4 years now. Yeah. And, you know, isn't that what life's all about, is we work together for 4 years. I feel like I know you as a coworker. We spent time together and, you know, done those things. But that's also service level. Like, I've really wanted for a long time to get to know you a bit better because I think that we're very kindred spirits. And so would you mind telling us your story?
Right? I would love to tell you my story.
Kind of like, you know, what was childhood like? Where are you from? How'd you get to where you are today?
Yeah. So I'm from Louisville, Kentucky, born and raised. When I think about my childhood, I thought a lot about this in preparation for coming on here. I had an amazing childhood. I could not have been more blessed and more loved. I had two parents who never made me feel anything less than cherished and loved and supported. I had grandparents who really, you know, that thread of love came from them. And I was just surrounded by an entire net of people who made me feel really supported. And I think there's a lot of that that's carried me into adulthood. And something that I really valued about my childhood and my upbringing, which I think informs a lot of me today, is that I was raised by this huge village of women who also worked in healthcare and were leaders in healthcare. And took care of the most vulnerable people in our population. And they, you know, from a young age, I got to see that, and I got to see them in action. And now I'm just trying to earn my spot amongst them. And I truly could not have asked for a better childhood.
It's wonderful. I mean, it is amazing how important the women's voices, especially in healthcare. I think that, you know, the emotional intelligence of women is like one of their superpowers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about this at work. If you're really working in healthcare and you're doing it right, it doesn't matter whether or not you're a nurse or a medical assistant or a doctor. Mm-hmm. You can be a marketing director and affect people's lives. You know, our task here is to, you know, to alleviate human suffering as it relates to chronic pain conditions. And everyone has to pull their weight to be able to do that. And so I hope you're really proud of the work that you're doing carrying on that legacy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, they're all kind of in different aspects of healthcare, whether it's direct patient care, whether it's like leading a team. But they all, you know, play that part. They're all in some form or fashion, you know, the work that they do at the end of the day is helping a person who needs it. And no matter what, you know, what part in that journey you are, it's like, it's valuable. And they taught me that from a young age until now. I'm still watching them.
What kind of things did they do or are they still doing in healthcare?
Yeah. So my My mom is she was a psychiatric nurse, and now she works on the insurance side. My maternal grandmother was the director of Hazelwood, ICFMR, and my stepmother is the executive director of Therapeutic Intervention Services, and then my paternal grandmother was the head RN at Central State.
Wow, that's a deep history.
And it's not just the women either. My dad also worked for Central State, and that's how he met my mom. And so it's always just been, it's surrounded my world. And so it's fun too, because now that I'm forming my own career, I can talk their language and they can speak mine. And so I can't tell you the amount of times I've sat down with like my dad and been like, I'm trying to like come up with an Excel sheet for referral tracking. And, you know, it's payers this, and it's enriching, because I'm like, okay, I have a whole other like well of information that I can tap into that I didn't know it was available to me when I was younger, because I wasn't doing healthcare.
Yeah, what did you think you were gonna do?
So
maybe as a kid, right?
Oh gosh,
they always
that
have
could,
those
like,
dreams
uh-huh.
of, that are, you know, wild, ambitious.
It depends on what age we're going back to. But for a really long time, I wanted to be an actress. I did theater and dance growing up, so I wanted to do that for a hot minute. And then when I got into high school was really when I went to Manual here locally, and I joined their journalism and communications magnet, which was very random. I was going to apply to YPASS and be one of those kids. But this is going to sound really like superficial, but this girl who I really admired applied to JNC. That's what the magnet's called. And I was like, well, maybe I should do it too. And then I joined, and it actually ended up being something that I really, really loved. And so then, coming out of high school, I knew I wanted to do something in communications, kind of marketing, or even, you know, journalism. So in college, I studied communications, and then my first job out of college was a TV news producer. And then I very quickly realized that I did not want to be in journalism. And so I came here, and I loved it.
Journalism is a whole new thing now, right?
Yeah.
You and I have spent a lot of time talking about the, you know, recent news and how that can make us feel. I just can't imagine being a journalist today.
No, it's, you know, I'm, God bless the people who do it. It's important. We need it. It's vital. But it's also super demanding in the digital age, because it's 24/7. You don't ever get to turn off, and newsrooms are really understaffed. And, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. And so it's hard to stay on top of all of it and also keep your own mental health.
Well, and nowadays
check.
There's so much pressure for you to lean one way or, you know, present a story in a way that the agency thinks that you should.
Mm-hmm.
Journalism's just not the same as it used to be.
It's not. And, and two, you know, it's not like you have a print deadline where you're like, okay, 5 p.m., we're done. It's like I was working until midnight sending out push alerts and updating blogs. And it's also instant that it's like there's just no time off.
Right. Yeah. And somehow you've been able to kind of go along this journey and be inquisitive along the way and try new things and kind of feels like you've found your groove where you're kind of back to your core, right? You're back to your heart.
Yeah.
Your whole family has been caregivers and really taking care of people in need. And you've found your unique way to be able to contribute and carry that legacy on. That's really, really cool.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, I remember having this thought in college when I was doing so I was communications, basically marketing, for the Louisville Metro Office of Resilience and Community Services, which is like the social services arm of Louisville Metro. And they did really good work. And it was also really emotionally taxing because it's you're working with people who are about to lose housing or heating and electric. And is something kind of clicked for me then that there's a little bit more meaning to the social posts and the flyers that I'm making. It's, you know, the end goal here is to help people who are in need. And so if marketing is, you know, doing these kinds of videos or blogs personally is fulfilling, and I know I'm good at it, but I can also use it for good, that's the combo. That's what wins.
Yeah. Well, who was it? Was it Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, that said, you know, look for the helpers?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like that you, your family, you're a big part of the story of who you guys are, is that you're helpers.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you recently, I say recently, in the recent past, got married.
How
did you meet your husband?
Okay, we met on an app. There was a period of time when I would tell people that, and they'd be like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's like, well, I didn't think there was, but now that you said that, cool. So we did meet on an app, and we went on our first date to Joella's Hot Chicken, shout out. We love Joella's. And then we saw a Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie. I don't even remember what it was called, but, yeah, you know, I totally knew before we even met. I was like, there's something very special about this guy. And
well, number one, he went to an RBG movie with you.
He went to an RBG movie and bought me hot chicken, man. Like, yeah. It's like, that's all you need. And Bryce is his name. He's very special to me. He is the love of my life. And we said, I love you less than a month in. And then we moved in together like a year later, and the rest is history. We got married in 2022. Yeah.
That's great.
3 years? Yeah, three
That's
years.
That's great. You know, your story seems a lot very similar to my wife and I's story, and I tell people all the time that I think looking back and hearing stories of all these various different people that I've been involved with and heard their stories, oftentimes the most wonderful relationships don't start off in this very mercurial, like hot, sweaty, passionate, like up and down love affair for years at a time. You meet someone, it feels comfortable. You feel like you can, you know who they are and you work well together. And the next thing you know, you spend your life together.
Yeah.
And there's something very beautiful about that.
There is. And like at the beginning of our relationship, I always tell people I was quite literally insane. I think love does that to you. And I mean, I was just, man, I was in love. I still am in love, but that's, you know, that beginning of a relationship is really like, man, insane. And, you know, I'm much less insane now, but it's, we've over the years settled into something that's so much better though.
Right.
It's deeper. And it's like the other day we were talking and I was like, we had an inside joke about this years ago, but I don't even remember what it is. Like we're reaching those kinds of stages in our relationship where I'm like, I've forgotten some of it, but like I get to come home and have someone who I'm like, can tell them anything.
Yeah, I think sometimes people have problems with relationships because they love that feeling, that kind of overwhelming feeling of insanity that we've all felt. You know, I think most everybody has felt if they're lucky enough to be able to experience that emotion. It's pretty cool, but I think they get addicted to that. And the minute that that wears off, that's what they think is love.
It's not sustainable, right? Like you...
It's a different kind of love. And it doesn't last. It's not meant to last. And if you want it to last, and that's your expectation of what a relationship's going to be like, you're setting yourself for failure. Man, good stuff. So, you know, looking back on growing up and your journey and how you got here, I feel like we all have really fond memories, things that kind of get burned into our memory bank about being kids. You mind sharing some of those with us, maybe reflecting on them a little bit?
Can I share one from recent memory?
Absolutely.
So on the topic of... you know, Bryce, my wedding, we had the most incredible wedding. I wouldn't have changed a thing, even though our DJ ended up being an Elvis impersonator.
Well, and you didn't know this going into it.
We didn't know that. And he was also very mean, so it was like later stage Elvis, DJing the wedding.
Wait, so it was mean fat Elvis.
It was mean fat Elvis. Yeah. And he quite literally like ignored people who were like, is this Haley and Bryce's wedding? And that's what I won't go down that road. But I have two memories from that day that when I like am having a hard time or, you know, having a rough day, I think back and it just like refreshes me. Besides marrying the love of my life, I had this moment before the wedding started. So my parents divorced when I was 10, and divorce is hard. It just sucks. We all came out of it for the better, but my parents were divorced and kind of didn't talk for the years following that. And so I knew going into the wedding, they were, you know, everyone would be nice. They were all there for me and Bryce. No one was gonna, they were all gonna be incredibly welcoming. But I got so much more than I thought I would. So before the wedding is about to start, my dad and I are in the kind of bridal suite area. And my mom comes in and it's the three of us alone, which has like never happened since they divorced. And, you know, they're very kind. How have you been? My mom was refreshingly honest. She was like, I've been through some shit. And we were all just like, amen, sister. And they were just, you know, they were being very kind and warm to each other. And I felt like I need to capitalize on this. I need to, like, lock in and commit this to memory. And so I was like, you know, guys, I never get this opportunity. So I just wanted to say I love you guys, and thank you for everything you've done to get me here. And we all start crying, and we're like, oh, my God. And, like, I did not wear waterproof mascara. But, you know, my parents were both just, like, they just said some really sweet things. My mom was like, I don't know how we made you. How did the two of us make someone like you? And it was just, like, total love in that moment.
Haley, they have to be so proud of you.
Thank you.
All that you've accomplished and the woman that you've become, and you know, you're really in the story of your life. It might feel like you're on chapter 3 or 4, mm-hmm. But if you are, it's going to be a long story. There's a lot left to write.
I owe it. I mean, and they would say like, oh, it's you who did it, which like, okay, there's some truth to that, but man, I could not have done it without them. I mean, it's just, no, I couldn't have done it without them. They're, all of this I owe to them. And then later that night, you know, oh my God, they just like my step parents and my parents mended any broken fences. And I actually, you know, my second memory here is what I really wanted from our wedding was I wanted a really cool dance party afterwards. I love to dance. And so it got to the part of the evening and everyone's got a little buzz going. My step-parents have, like, taken a photo together. They're all hugging each other. It's great. We got into a big dance circle, and I have this on camera, like, thankfully. And it's a part of the night where it's just the core group of people. And we're dancing to Doses and Mimosas by Cherub. It's a banger.
Not familiar with it. I'll have to get it on
my... You have to. It's a great song. And we're just dancing and having a great time. Everyone's smiling, not caring about looking good or, you know, there's no hate in that room, no beef, no tension. It's just all the people who I love most in the world in a big circle just feeling good.
Man, that's beautiful.
It's...
Your story resonates with me because I also had divorced parents, and I also only saw them in the same room very few times.
Yeah.
But the humanity of getting in that circle, and it's kind of like Christmas mourning on the front lines, on the front lines in World War One, where, you know, everybody drops their guns and they meet in the middle and, you know, they drink eggnog or, you know, push back some whiskey and they become humans again for just a brief period of time before they pick up their weapons again and go back to their, you know, corner.
But you know what? The beauty was is that they never picked the weapons back up again.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. We even, the next day, they, like, exchanged text messages, like, we're family. Oh my gosh. Then even for my birthday, which was, you know, we got married in April and my birthday's in July, we all got together at my dad's house and had a cookout. And you know what? It was amazing. It was a great time. And it was...
Probably makes you feel like, what were we waiting for? Why did it take all of this time? Why did it take a pivotal moment, like the marriage of our daughter, to be able to get back in the same room together and recognize our humanity and move on and just celebrate life?
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
It happened, though.
Yeah, so before we roll up our sleeves and get into some of the, you know, deep thoughts by Haley Spears kind of thing, I know that, you know, you're ready for that. I came to you and I said, you know, I want to explore some topics that you want to talk about, you know, themes or books or music or art. And you said, ooh, I can rattle all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I looked through them. You know, you said some things like, let's talk about black holes and other life in the universe. And, you know, I don't even know if I want to go there. I mean, that's some pretty deep
totally
stuff.
Cool,
but I did want to talk about the book Atmosphere by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Oh, my gosh.
What
man.
An amazing book, huh?
Did you read it?
I did read it.
Oh, it's so good.
Now, she wrote, was it The Seven Husbands of...
Evelyn Hugo.
Evelyn Hugo. And she wrote, I think... What was it? Daisy Jones and the Six.
Daisy Jones and the Six, yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell me what you loved about that book so much.
I'm a sucker for a really good love story. I want to say, like, well, I thought what she said about us being from Stardust was what pulled me in. But really, I loved the love story between, I'm forgetting the main characters' names. The two, the leads in that book were...
it's a really untraditional love story.
It's
surrounded around astronauts, kind of at the relative beginning of the NASA space program, and two female astronauts.
Yeah. Yes. And I think, you know, it did a good job of kind of blending the technical kind of part of being an astronaut, which kind of kicked off for me... kind of an admiration of, like, these are, like, women in STEM who are just smart and, like, are just smart and are good at what they do. But then also, like, the beauty behind what they're doing, you know, exploring the universe is, you know, you have to be a really smart person to go out into space, but they're also doing it for really beautiful reasons.
That's right.
And I think that's what pulled me in.
Yeah. I took down a couple of quotes from that book that really resonated with me, and I think you talked about the, you know, the connection to the story of us from Cosmic Dawn to the depths of being, and we talk about that, you know, when you peel it all the way back, we all came from the same star material, right? We all were born in nuclear reactors in the middle of stars, and our atoms are all the same ones that just keep recycling and recycling, and we need to respect that. But, you know, there was a quote in the book that said, well, we are the stars. And the stars are us.
Mm-hmm.
Every atom in our bodies was once out there, was once a part of them.
Mm-hmm.
To look at the night sky is to look at parts of who you once were, who you may one day be.
Isn't that beautiful?
Ooh, so beautiful. All right, I took down one more, too.
Please, yeah.
Oh, I love this one. She says, I want to spend my energy thinking not of how my actions might be frowned upon by a big man in the sky, but how my actions affect every living and non-living thing around me. Life is God.
Mm-hmm.
My life is tied to yours and to everyone's on the planet.
That's beautiful.
To be able to weave quotes like that into a book that, I don't know, maybe is a little bit about space travel. It's a little bit about feminine power and, you know, breaking through barriers in a time when the STEM world was dominated by men. But it's also this gorgeous love story about, you know, two women that fall in love very deeply. And
Yeah.
Won't ruin the end of it for everybody, but
so good.
We'll definitely have to put it out there so that everybody that's listening can make sure they can listen to it now or watch it. Yeah. You're a bookworm. You had tons of books on here. There's lots of them, small things like these. And yeah. I, Who Have Never Known Men, I looked them up both. They're in my Goodreads list.
Yeah.
I'll have to circle back with you on that. But we talked about music and, you know, I knew this already, huge Kacey Musgraves fan. You got
That's
to see
girl.
Her down in Nashville, I think, at the Ryman. Was that right?
Well, I wish. I knew she was at the Ryman one day, and I did not go. But I did get to see her at the Yum Center, bought VIP tickets, put a real hurt on the bank account that day, and stood at the front of the pit and made eye contact with Kacey Musgraves. So,
ooh.
So, you know.
Your life's complete now.
My life's kind of complete.
The other artists that you put on here, man, I can close my eyes and see what it's like to hang out with Haley at the end of the day. These are some pretty chill artists,
thank
man.
You, yeah.
Beach House, Fleetwood Mac,
yeah.
Tame Impala, Marvin Gaye. I mean, you're throwing the master
yeah,
in there.
Yeah.
And a one that I've been listening to lately that you turned me on to, Father John Misty.
He's a good one.
That's some pretty chill stuff.
I actually got to see him in concert in February. He puts on a great show. And mine and Bryce's first dance song was to When You're Smiling in a Stride Me by Father John Misty, which is like a love song for the ages.
All right. I'm putting it on my Apple Tunes
as you
list.
Should.
I'm going to listen to it. The one Kacey Musgraves song, though, that you shot out big time, like number one best record ever, Deeper Well. Yeah, I went and actually listened to some of that, and I like Kacey Musgraves too. I love her song Rainbow.
It's a great one.
That's
yeah.
one that I listen to a lot. I think there's somebody that I think about when I hear that song, and I think
yeah.
that's the cool thing about music is that, you know, sometimes it can take you back to another place in time. You know, the
Gosh,
80s and
yeah.
90s songs that I still listen to, I can kind of feel myself in that space. But sometimes it's more than just the beautiful music and the beautiful, you know, vocals. They're storytellers. And, you know, the song Deeper Well, off of Deeper Well, that's got a pretty good message.
It has an amazing message. And the best music meets you where you are in your life. And Golden Hour, the album, which she's really known for, is... I listened to that when my relationship with Bryce was blossoming, and that's a whole album about falling in love and like the beauty of that. And then she put out Deeper Well, which again resonated with me at the time. Because Deeper Well, she literally is like, when I turned 27, I just turned 27. And so, she just said a lot of things in that song about, you know, for me, when I listened to it, I saw in myself, like, I have my own deeper well that I pull from. And all the stuff that really matters about life is in that well.
Yeah. And I think one of the most important things is that if you recognize that and you know where your deeper well lies, how do you continue to replenish that well? You can't
exactly.
just keep taking things out and out. So are there little things that you do to help kind of fill your well? You know, that's very close to a term that you taught me that, man, I have stole. It is in my toolbox. And it's like, what fills your cup? But what fills your deeper well?
I was going to say, before we filmed, I was like, I should tell Jeff that we should rephrase that to like what... It doesn't have the same ring to it, but like what fills your well. I think what fills my well is my family and my husband and our home for sure. I care a lot about having a space that is warm and comfortable and like full of love. And I really am protective of my home. And keeping that space, like, I say this, what I'm trying to say is I used to work from home when I was in journalism, and man, that like ruined my apartment for
yeah.
me at the time. I didn't want to be there at all. So I take a lot of efforts to keep the home like sacred in a way. That's maybe heavier of a word than I'm looking for. But besides that, you know, nourishing my hobbies is really important for me, like reading and cooking. I love to cook and to bake. And for me, it's really meditative. I know not in the traditional sense, but it forces me to kind of be there, focused on measuring the tomato paste or garlic powder, or trying to, you know, following along with what's going on in my book.
You've got to be there in that moment.
You have to be there in that moment. And it's a project that you can see from the beginning to the end, and then you get a delicious meal, hopefully, out of it. And so every night, I really look forward to cooking. And then on the weekends, I usually, you know, I love, again, to cook or to bake. And it just calms me down. I don't know. It calms down, like, my whatever synapses or whatever. My nervous system.
Right.
There you go. And then yoga. I've recently gotten into yoga, which, same thing. I go to a studio, which is so much more productive for me than doing it at home.
Right.
Because I quite literally can't, like, look at my phone or scroll TikTok. I'm at this place that's dedicated to the purpose of being present and being kind of in touch with your body and your breath. The effects of it aren't confined to the studio. I go home and I feel it carries on, and, like, you know, it's like a muscle. So the more you do it, like, the more I can kind of reap the benefits.
You seem
later.
Really in tune too. So you know when you need that, and you take the opportunity to recognize that, and then, you know, gift yourself that time, whether it's cooking a good meal, listening to some, you know, Tame Impala and chilling out, right?
For sure.
Or going to the yoga studio. Before we get off Kacey Musgraves and Deeper for those who don't know, I love some of these lyrics. And, you know, the start of that song says, "My Saturn has returned. When I turned 27, everything started to change. Took a long time, but I learned there's two kinds of people. One's a giver and one always trying to take all they can take. So I'm going to say goodbye to the people that I feel are real good at wasting my time." Woo, preach on, girl.
Mm-hmm.
That's some good stuff. That's some good stuff. Are you ready to dig a little deeper?
Let's go deep into the well.
Okay. All right. We'll go deep into the well. So here's a good question. Have you experienced moments where your understanding of consciousness kind of shifted dramatically, perhaps through either, you know, sometimes that's overwhelming grief or overwhelming awe?
Yeah. I think there was a period of time that I think about a lot when I was about 15. I was in high school, and, I mean, that's a pretty angsty time for anyone. But I, around this age, started to kind of ask myself some questions that I had never thought about before. Like, you know, what's nothingness? What if nothing existed? And I freaked myself out with that. But also, what was here before the Big Bang? Like, what does a billion years even mean? Like, what happens when I'm gone? What does it mean to experience nothingness? And it was really kind of like my own miniature existential crisis, where I was like, why do I even matter, man? Like,
poor little 15-year-old Haley.
Well, she was fine. She was fine. But she was wrestling with some big questions. I really struggled with, like, why does anything that I do even matter? Like, I'm on one planet that's, like, statistically insignificant compared to everything else in the universe. And there was a period of time where I really thought of my life as before I asked these questions and then after I asked these questions. Because I don't want to say, like, I was awoken, but I kind of was. I was starting to ask some adult big questions. And it was almost kind of like a veneer or something of my childhood. I kind of looked past it and was like, okay, what's my existence really all about? And it really kind of helped shape the way I think about, you know, meaning today, but also, you know, how I value different things.
Yeah, isn't that the question that deep down every Homo sapien from the minute that we existed, whatever you believe and whatever origin story you think is the truth.
Yeah.
But hasn't that been the question? And then ultimately, it's the question that we can never really get to. And man, it can really mess you up.
It can really mess you up. But I think what I took away from that, I think, was, okay, no one's going to tell me what my meaning is, what my purpose is. There's no one who's going to come answer this question for me, so I have to answer it for myself. Like, it's up to me to determine what my purpose and my meaning is here on Earth. And I like to think that my meaning is to just do my best to leave the world better than I found it in whatever way I can.
It's gorgeous. I think I feel the same way too. I recently read something that said, what if the meaning of life isn't carved in stone, but it's written on water, continuously, ooh, beautifully, and impermanently? Yeah, I don't know.
I like that.
The deeper you get, you know, it's turtles all the way down.
It's
like
turtles
we were talking.
All the way down, man.
Buddhism is something that I've really been interested in over the last 2 or 3 years. And, you know, they talk about how, you know, life doesn't, you don't really have to assume that there's a beginning or end to the universe. Mm. It's just kind of cyclical.
Right.
There are infinite pasts and infinite futures, but meaning doesn't rely on a end point, what humans believe of to be like a finish line, right? This is what we perceive as our death. It comes from how we respond to the present moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing. I think is once you start asking these deep questions, it all comes down to what you just said. I just, at the end of the day, whatever happens after that,
right,
I'm going to be comfortable with so long as I left this world a better place.
Yes.
And I think there are millions and millions of humans that, if they're asking these deep questions, get to that same response. It's, you know, I just want to know that my life was meaningful. I want to know that I helped other people. I wanted to know that I left the world that was handed to me in a better condition than I found it.
Yep.
The Buddhists talk about dukkha, which is like clinging to meaning in the form of permanence, right?
Yep.
Clinging on to something, and everything in life is impermanent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the trees fall down, your house is eventually going to crumble into the ground. Gosh, I think about all the time, what are archaeologists in the year 3000 going to think of Las Vegas? It's like, oof, that's going to blow their mind, right? But everything is impermanent, and most of the suffering in humanity comes from clinging on to things that are impermanent in nature and, like, forcing them to be permanent.
Mm.
Awakening to the now is really big. Do you still feel that same panic sometimes? Or has it evolved into something else?
I don't think I feel that same panic anymore. I think it's morphed into curiosity. Like, let's lean into it rather than being scared by it. Like, I can't change it. I can't change that the universe is vast and unknowable, but I can try to know more about it, and I can learn what I can. And so now it's, it doesn't scare me because I feel pretty rooted in, you know, why I'm here. And I feel that I'm delivering upon the purpose I set out for myself. And so now I'm just like, let's learn what we can about it while we can. I'm trying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think death is one of those things that all humans, I mean, I think it's the most human thing to be fearful of.
Yeah.
I think it can be pretty crazy. Some people suggest that, you know, most human culture, things like art, religion, politics, they're at least in some part, they're trying to achieve symbolic immortality.
Yeah.
Right? You know, be remembered.
Yeah.
Leave a legacy, become part of something bigger. You agree with that?
Repeat that one more time.
Yeah. art, religion, politics, all of these things are trying to achieve symbolic mortality,
yeah.
right? They're trying to leave a legacy. One of the things that I asked you was, was there a story, text, piece of wisdom that you kept returning to across all the seasons of your life? And you quoted Victor Hugo in Les Mis, right?
Yeah.
And I'll share that quote with the audience. And I think this speaks to what you were talking about. But to love or have loved, that is enough. Ask nothing further. There is no other pearl to be found in the dark folds of life. I love it.
That's good stuff.
It's really, really good stuff. So let's switch gears. Let's talk about connection and interconnectedness and kind of finding the us in the story of us, mm-hmm. right? Have you had these really deep experiences that make you feel connected, like undeniably to other people, to the universe at large?
Yes. I think my experiences while traveling have been really important to help me kind of understand my place in the world, but also understand that I'm just one of like billions of people. I had this one experience where I was in Cologne, Germany, with my family, and we were at the cathedral there, which is super old. I think it was built in like the 1100s. And my dad talked about how when he goes to places like this, he'll go in and he'll put his hand on a piece of stone in the cathedral and think about all of the people who have walked through here, mothers praying for their child to like heal, people coming here and praying for wars to end, coming here and getting married, like feeling joy. And the way he put it was really touching. And so when I was there, I did the same thing. I put my hand on the stone and just kind of thought about that, like how many millions of people have walked in here or walked through here, and like I'll never know them, but they existed. And now I'm just one more person who's come here and had an experience in the same walls. I don't know if I did a good job of putting that into words, but I felt connected to everyone else who had had that experience over thousands of years.
Well, I think that if we all were paid more attention, we have moments like that periodically.
Yeah.
Where we feel that way. I love your response. I mean, it is so deeply human. I think I've felt that too.
It's hard not to.
And I think that you're kind of teaching me why travel has been so important to me.
Yep.
I've got to go to some really cool places. I've got to go to, Buddhist temples in Thailand. I've been to the Colosseum in Rome. You go to the Vatican, ancient Mayan temples in Mexico.
Yeah.
And I have that same feeling.
Yep.
Gosh, you kind of close your eyes and you think of thousands of years and all of these different stories.
Yep.
These people, they all mattered. They all mattered in the fabric of, where we are and the story that humanity's trying to tell. And, it also does give you that little bit of a panic attack. It's like my time here on the earth is brief.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Shakespeare. It's, I'm going to strut and fret my hour upon the stage and then be heard no more. And, you can take that emotion and it can re-energize you when you return back to the real world, right?
I think, too, traveling, for me at least, it's helped me kind of put my stuff into perspective. I'm like, there's a whole other world out here, and that's not even a fraction of like what's out there. So why do my little neuroses or worries about, I don't know, someone flipping me off in traffic? It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's here and gone. It doesn't really exist. That's one of the great things that I hope to accomplish with the Story of Us project and this podcast is that conversations like this between you and I, you just stamped this conversation on the ether, right? It's going to be on the World Wide Web. It's going to be there for you to listen to in the future. It's going to be preserved for future generations. And we're going to send the same message that, you know, the Neanderthals did 64,000 years ago. You see those stenciled hand drawings. It's like, I was here.
Mm-hmm.
My life had meaning.
Yeah.
My life had purpose. And so I love you sharing these things with me. You've got a lot of depth, and I think it's really, really cool. Let's talk about something else.
Let's do it. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. Let's see. Do you mind if we return back to death?
Not at all.
So I asked you this question, and you said you were prepared to respond. So we'll see if you are or not. But you want to share a time when not knowing the answer was actually what led you to deeper clarity or purpose. And you said that was not knowing what happens after death.
Yeah. Death is something that I've thought about ever since I was very young. Because, you know, okay, I was raised not in any religion. I was never taught, or I never really learned of a heaven or a hell or purgatory. And so it was kind of natural for me to think, well, when we die, we die. But then the more I thought about it, it was like, okay, well, what does that mean to not exist? That's kind of scary. Does that mean I'm just trapped in like this black hole of nothingness? But then the more I kind of thought about it, you know, it became less scary to me. I think that when we die, it's the same as before I was born. There was a infinite period of time before I was born, where I didn't exist. I wasn't scared. I didn't exist. I think that, you know, when I die, that'll be what happens. And I think that's just a part of life. And for me, it kind of coming to terms with that doesn't mean I'm not still scared. Of course I'm scared, because all I've known is existence and consciousness. But it gives me a sense of, I need to make this matter. I need to get this right. Really value the time that I do have with the people I love, doing the things that I love.
Yeah, well, that means you're a human being, right? I think we're all honest. We've all felt that way, and we all kind of shudder at the idea of, you know, what if myself, what if my ego doesn't exist anymore? What happens after that? Yeah. And, you know, I don't think anybody's got that figured out yet, but I do think you're on the right path by saying, you know what, you know, if the past doesn't exist and the future doesn't exist, and I want to make my life meaningful, I better be present.
Right.
I better take the time to really figure it out in today, make today special.
Right.
You know, under all of it, I think that this fear of death, it's what drives 90% probably of human actions and interactions, and probably not the right ones if we're really being honest.
Sure.
If we really think we have some sort of expiration date, you know, whether that's later today, sometime next week, or, I don't know, years from now, I think humans have evolved and developed a devilish little thing that I call self-awareness.
Mm.
Without it, that the knowledge that death is inevitable is not that scary, right?
Right.
I think that's part is like this self-awareness is what, you know, gives rise to existential dread, anxiety that no other species, as far as we know, carries around with it, you know, with themselves.
Right.
There's a paradox there, right? We see ourselves as stable, coherent, ongoing cells, but we also know we are impermanent, we're breakable, and then we're eventually gone.
Mm-hmm.
We fear death not just because it ends a life, but because it ends our story.
Right. I think it's kind of... I don't know the right way to say it, but I think that's kind of great. I think that's kind of beautiful. I might be getting waxing poetic here, but like, I don't think I'm meant to live forever, or I don't need my story to live forever. so long as, you know, I just did my part, I'm okay that after I go, I think when you kind of think that when I die, it's over, it gives you kind of, you're motivated by the present moment and like doing what's right then, rather than hoping for like a recognition later on.
Right.
And so it's freeing too, because I'm like, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about making my own meaning. It's like, it's up to me. It's up to me. And it's not up to anyone else. So how am I going to make it matter?
Yeah. And what is really surprising when you think through the human psyche is that I think a lot of people have these initial thoughts of death and they have this underlying fear of what that means. And they're asking these questions and not such a, you know, a beautiful way that you're asking them and thinking through them. And it's kind of part of your natural progression of your life.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to be doing much about it. I mean, if they really believe that there's a finish line that we're all going to hit at some point and they don't know really when that is, what are they doing today?
Right.
I think most people are living and, you know, ruminating in past. They're worried about the future.
Yeah.
And if they really, truly were being honest with themselves, they can eliminate some of this fear by just, you know, hey, look, let's just worry about today.
Right.
And let's just make today be the best that it can be.
Yes. And, you know, death is so taboo. A lot of people get real uncomfortable talking about it.
Well, I think it's because it gives them, like,
crushing
anxiety.
Correct. But I think we could help ease that if we had honest conversations about death and dying. And, you know, it's going to happen. So, like,
death and
maybe
taxes.
Death
things
and taxes.
You can definitely count on.
How can we instead, you know, find beauty in it? Of course, it's sad. I don't want to die. I don't want people I love to die, but it's inevitable. So, how can I, instead of making it like, I've seen people, you know, family members who have died, and man, I don't want to go out that way. And I think a lot of it was, people just didn't know how to talk about it. They didn't know how to confront it,
right.
Understandably. But I'm like, we can have a better conversation around, as a culture, death. And I don't know. There's like death doulas now. I think that's really cool. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff we could go into there. But removing some of that stigma, I think, just makes it easier on everyone.
Yeah, I think one of the goals of starting The Story of Us was that, you know, the insights that you share are going to help other people who suffer better understand themselves too. I think you've done a great job of that today, and I really hope that you'll join us again so we can dig into, you know, a lot of these questions that you stood up and said, "Hey, man, I'm ready to answer it. Let's go for it." And we run out of time really, really fast, but. You're just such a remarkable human being. I'm so fortunate to know you and get to spend time with you at work, doing the good work that we're trying to do here at the company. But a couple more questions real quick.
Lay it on me.
So what you think about what the next chapter in the Book of Haley is going to be?
Mm-hmm. I have thought about the next chapter of the Book of Haley. I think next chapter is becoming a mom.
Oh.
Yeah. I want to be a parent. Not there yet. But me and Bryce and I are really, you know, we're doing a lot of these things that we want to do before we have kids. So we're doing a lot of traveling and kind of getting ourselves in a good spot to become responsible for a whole other person. You want to talk about existential crisis? Like, that's...
Well, that's not really writing the next chapter. That's kind of going to act two.
Well, okay.
Especially for women. You know, it's not fair. I think that one of my influences is Joseph Campbell. He's a comparative mythologist. And he talks about... And I'm gonna muddy this up, but he talks about basically the... It sounds weird, but when you become a mother, that whole first part of your life.
Yeah.
It's like it's almost like a little mini death, because you become somebody so different, and that's
what I hear.
That's so beautiful. It's so necessary to the circle of life. Yeah. But man, I could bet that can be really, really scary for a woman.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's, yeah, it's scary.
Okay. One more question, but it's got two parts.
Okay. I'm ready.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with it. So, you know, this podcast is, like we just talked about, it's going to be stamped on the ether. It's, you know, part of the human story. Mm-hmm. What I hope you'll be able to do is that, there's going to be another version of you, whether that's, you know, the mom version of you, mm-hmm. or the 60-year-old version of you, or the 75-year-old version of you, whatever mm-hmm. that's going to be. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in the fact that, you know, we change dramatically over time. Certain things stay the same, but, you know, I don't recognize some of the old versions of myself. But you have the opportunity to tell that 60-year-old or 75-year-old Haley something from now.
Okay.
What do you want to tell to that version of yourself?
Ooh, okay. I think I would tell her, I hope that you haven't lost sight of, this is hard. I'm not going to verbalize this the right way, but I would want to say, don't lose sight of the things that, like, give you purpose, or
don't stop filling your well.
Don't stop filling your well, and don't stop being curious. I think in this chapter of life where my Saturn is returning, I feel like my frontal lobe has developed a little bit. And I'm kind of really settling into, like, what gives me purpose and meaning and happiness, professionally and personally. And I just hope that she doesn't lose sight of that, whether it's the same things or not is whatever. But I hope she's still, hope her well is full.
You're in a really good spot in your life. And I think, by the way, I think you verbalized that perfectly.
Thank you.
I think
thank
everyone's going to understand exactly you. What you mean. And elderly Haley, like, I think that's a good message for you to remember. Not putting you on the spot, but maybe we do the reverse. We've got a couple extra minutes here. That 15-year-old version of Haley that we talked about,
mm-hmm.
what do you want to tell her?
What would I tell her? I would tell her, you're going to be so fine. You're going to figure this stuff out. Maybe, you know, you might not have the clear answer, but, like, I remember I felt so trapped in my own head at that time and was like, oh, how do I even get out of this? It's all worth it. All the suffering is worth it. It has a purpose, and you'll come out on the other side, and you'll have the transformation you're going through now is you're like a caterpillar, and
part of life.
It's necessary, and it's okay. And it's beautiful, and you'll find the beauty in it.
I love that. Haley, you're a remarkable person. I know that your family is just beaming with pride about what you're accomplishing and is looking forward to the next chapter in your life. And I hope that you'll agree to do this again. Hopefully it wasn't too painful.
No, I love talking to you.
That's good. That's great. Well, we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
Haley, I appreciate you, and I want to say peace be with you.
Namaste, and peace be with you, Jeff.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.